Welcome to The Squirrel Cage, featuring spirited discussion on 12-step recovery topics with occasional guests, hosted by some guys who say they have double-digit sobriety and sponsors. Since we hate long intros, you can hear more about who we are and how to communicate with us after the podcast. Well, hello everyone. I'm Cal, your host of The Squirrel Cage, and today I'm going to do something a little unusual. I'm going to play the raw feed from a podcast pre-interview because the guest never showed to record the broadcast version. Here's the backstory. My co-host at the time and I would schedule guests for the podcast and do a pre-interview with them, usually 2 or 3 days beforehand. The purpose is to make sure we're on the same page regarding subject matter and such, and also to make sure the technology is working okay. We scheduled a Thursday meeting with, let's call him Bob, with the plan to record the broadcast version on the following Sunday. Now, I never record these rehearsals because there's just no need to, but about 10 minutes in, something told me to push the record button, which I did. Also, it's truncated at the end, which basically leaves you with about a 15-minute long recording of what should have been 30 or 40 minutes. While you're listening, keep the image in your mind of a 30-something male with a goatee beard, chain smoking, while drinking a 40-ounce Budweiser in an apartment setting that looked like it was a little, let's say, rough around the edges. Anyway, I'll be making comments throughout, and I'll also explain at the end what happened at the end. So without any further delay, here's Bob, the guy who didn't like AA.
Oh, I'm like, is that going to be my life? You know, and I couldn't, I'm not going to fucking do that, man. I'm not going to be that guy. Like during this whole pandemic thing, they'll be like us, but they're clinging to their phone screaming about how hard it is and how horrible it is and this and that. And it's just, I don't know. They feel the social life. They've traded one addiction for another. That's the best way I could put it. They've traded, you know, one addiction, which was, I guess, alcohol or crack, for this little social circle that they got where they can feel important. They use it as like group therapy and all this other shit. And I just noticed all of it, and I wasn't falling into their bullshit or their rhetoric. I mean, their whole lives revolve around not doing one thing. I've seen what their lives revolve around. They revolve around these meetings and these people, and they all wear their disease like a badge of honor, you know? I don't want my life to be like that.
Okay, I've got to jump in at this point. So how hard it was during COVID, how horrible it was. Okay, I don't doubt that somebody was saying that to you, but I got to tell you that isolating is the dream of some sober alcoholics, albeit an unhealthy one. But meeting attendance does not or should not have anything to do with long-term sobriety. Meetings are merely a means to an end, not an end in themselves. And without that, you can have Zoom meetings. You can talk on the telephone. People do it all the time. So I don't know. If they think that they can't stay sober because they can't go to meetings or it makes it horrible, I don't know what to tell them. Now, another thing I've heard him and other people say is AA going to be my entire life? And the way I've heard that described before is describing AA as an identity and as a soul identity. And the best way I have of demonstrating how not true that is using the analogy of diabetes. If you're diagnosed with that, you happen to be a diabetic, and what that would mean would be checking your blood sugar and insulin shots and watching your diet. If you do those things, then you've got 90% of the rest of your life to define yourself as a dancer or as a stud, or I don't know what, But the idea that it's somehow an identity, I don't identify myself as an alcoholic. It's simply a condition, or what I like to think of as a disease, that I attach to myself, but that's not who I am. I can do all sorts of things. I can get arrested, I can drive a car, I can, you name it. So that seems silly to me. And then the dumbest one that I've heard over the years is, well, they're just trading one addiction for another. Oh, really? Okay, well, let's take a look at this. Seems to me that would be true if one addiction involved waking up in the emergency room covered in bruises with no money in your pocket and no memory of how you got there, only to go home and find a ruined family life, and the other addiction was going to meetings and working the steps. Okay, you balance that one out. I won't even do that for you. So, to his credit, he mentions that he might have been part of a bad group, of which there are many, I'm sure. This underscores the importance, in my mind, of the need to go to more than one meeting place from time to time, somewhere beside your chosen home group. Since I've moved to this new city where I'm at, they're more likely to have storefronts for a single group, although that's been changing over the years. I've known people who only go to that group for 3 or 4 meetings a day, every week. And the problem I see with that is what I would call spiritual inbreeding, which leads to a bunch of spiritual idiots that you end up with. I think it's really important to incorporate some other AA DNA, to follow through with the analogy, from other types of meetings and have exposure to other kind of people and other beliefs and so on and so forth. Anyway, let's hear what more he has to say.
Yeah, maybe my group was just a bad one. I'm not down in it completely. It might work for some people. Maybe you were a piece of shit, but there was a guy there who was really judgy, who I guess he was about to relapse, and he had the nerve to go around and tell people that I was asking him to come drink with me, and I never did. And oof. I was like, what? I was like, excuse me? I would never ask anybody from there, like, hey, come have a beer. I had called him that day, and I told him, listen, man, that whole sick and disease thing, you're not, man. You make bad decisions. And then I found out what was going on with him. And so then I called him a pussy because apparently he would get drunk and wired and then beat his wife and his like 2-year-old kid all the time. Listen, man, whenever I was fucked up, I would fight in bars or something like that. Or I still do. And I think quite like a good scrap if this fucking coronavirus would ever end. Mm. But yeah, dude, he would straight up. And it's a good scapegoat for him. They want to use the fact that maybe you're a shitty person as, you know, they're going to turn that into, it wasn't me. I'm not that person. It was the drugs. It was the booze. And I'm like, no, it's you. You're that person. You're the one that beat your wife. You're the one that cheated on your wife. And you're the one that neglected your fucking children. You're the one that.
Okay. So when I first came in, it would have taken a whole lot more than one guy bad-mouthing me to make me not want to go again. I don't even know if I would have noticed it. But second of all, wild horses at that point would have not been able to keep me away from at least trying Alcoholics Anonymous. So the idea that there was someone really judgy who was going to, by saying these idiotic things, was going to somehow taint his view of the program, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know what else to say. But the most important thing is the idea when he says that it was that the bad behavior was a scapegoat of some sort, meaning, let me rephrase that, he says it pretty succinctly when he says, it's not that you're a shitty person. That's not me. It was the drugs. It was the booze. No, it's you. You're that person. You're the one who beat your wife. You're the one who neglected your fucking children. The thing is that the reason we do those things, usually is because we're alcoholics. I can tell you from personal experience, I had a lot of trouble managing money, specifically credit cards, when I was drinking and using. And abracadabra, I stopped drinking and using, and I didn't have that problem anymore. There's a half a dozen other things like that that I can cite. There's another thing, though, that does come up from time to time, and it's this concept of, if you sober up a horse thief, you end up with a sober horse thief. So when we come in, the other thing to do, which we can't do until we stop drinking, is attempt to build a new character. That's in step 7 in the 12 and 12. And that's the real frontier. After a while, I mean, not drinking is almost like a horse clomping his foot 4 times on the ground to tell you he's 4 years old. It's just like, well, good, that's a nice trick, but what have you done for me lately? Now, that's not to minimize the act of sobriety. It's a dangerous and desperate act. But after that, we don't just stop. The Hollywood trope is AA meetings are people sitting around in a smoke-filled room drinking coffee, and each person shares from a podium, and they, and that's it. That's what AA is portrayed as, and that is a very small part of AA. The meetings are all well and good, but they're only a means to an end. They're not the end, as I've said before. And you go there so you can find newcomers. You go there to be reminded that you're an alcoholic too, but you go there so you can find newcomers. And the newcomers, as part of step 12, is what allows us to stay sober one day at a time for the rest of our lives. But the idea that he's switching sort of, back to identities. Yeah, you're a bad person. Well, why? And as often as not, it's being under the influence, the lying, the cheating, the stealing, the violence, you name it. Most of that stuff comes as a result of being addicts. And when you take that away, most of that stuff goes away. But not all of it. So anyway, back to the show.
I even dated a girl in recovery, you know, don't do that, right? They always say, don't do that. I did. And fact of the matter is that this chick could have gotten her kids back, but she didn't want to stop smoking pot. You don't understand what it's like. I'm like, okay, well, how long has it been? And she's like, oh, it hasn't been that long. Dude, she's going to lose her kids. She couldn't put down a joint for 2 months or 30 days. And they've been in like other, like the state care for over a year now. She lost it. And now she's... Wow. Mad and everything, saying that I'm the reason she quote-unquote relapsed or something like that. I'm like, you're still smoking pot, though, and you could have gotten your kids back, and I told you this.
Now we're really going down the rabbit hole here. First, he says he dated a girl in recovery, and I'm making those quote marks in the air. Then he says she wouldn't stop smoking pot, and then he says that she couldn't put it down and she lost her kids because of that, and then blamed it on him. Okay, so where's the part that the 12 steps had anything to do with that? It doesn't sound like she was in recovery at all. That sounds like the behavior of someone who is in fact not in recovery. And blaming him for her bad behavior on her part is right out of the Alcoholics Anonymous playbook, i.e., it's not me, it's you. I'm not the problem. And that's part of what he was complaining about before. Ideally, when we come in and get sober and start working the steps, we stop blaming other people and start taking personal responsibility, which it doesn't sound like this gal did at all. I really don't know what to say about this next section, so I'm just going to let him speak for himself, and then you try to make sense out of it.
I read that damn book twice, the first 164 pages twice in a day. These guys, they go, oh, I'm only on page 35. I'm like, what? It's written at an eighth grade level, dude.
Yeah.
Like, seriously.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, bro. I mean, like, you're fucking 30. Jesus. And unlike me, he graduated high school. Dude, seriously, he's dead ass. He graduated high school with honors. And he couldn't fucking finish that shit. I got kicked out. I was like, fuck. But I just, you notice it. Like, and it's weird. You might have a couple of decent people in there who are really caring. But if you ever call them on anything or you insult the program or the book, it's fucked up. My own sponsor said I was too young, too intelligent, and too handsome to ever get started. He told me that. Me, handsome. I look like Johnny Depp if he fucking smoked meth, for fuck's sake. But yeah, he's like, yeah, you got it. You're too young, you're too handsome, and you're too smart to ever get sober. And I'm like, yeah, thanks for telling me that, bro. Appreciate it.
Well, like I said, I'll leave that to you. I don't get it at all. Anyway, the next part is of particular interest to me because he asks point blank, have you ever been in a recovery program? And I detected a distinct shift in mood. And he went from, I remember him saying, well, you'll hear it in the track where he goes, there you go. And he sounds a lot more cheery and a lot more positive about the program, but there's an underlying vibe of, I didn't know you guys were in the program. And now he feels he has to kind of watch his words or something to that effect. And I also, and I may be reading too much into this, but I also detected that he was kind of surprised that it was even possible that a couple of guys that seemed relatively okay both had a lot of time. So I'll leave you to judge that also for yourselves, and we'll see what you think.
What about, have y'all ever been in recovery programs or anything?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm sober 25 years in AA.
25 years in AA.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. 1994, July 17. And I sponsor probably three guys.
There you go.
If somebody comes in and they're brand new, especially if they're new, but anytime somebody wants to come in, and you know, the classic thing is like they can't get the God thing, or they can't, and they don't like the people or the meeting or this. It's just like,
well, why would you like the people? Come on,
you got me there. But the it's just like I don't have an argument, you know, for it. I really don't. Yeah. For whatever the reason, you know, what I stumbled into worked, but.
I mean, I'm not down to the program as a whole. I think if it helps some people, that's great. But rather the group that I went to taught me, I don't know, man. It was just, it was close by, and I tried a few others. And, you know, like I said, it's just everyone talking about the same bullshit, same everything. And they're like, it's so hard today. I don't want to live my life, you know, with this Achilles heel that's self-induced. And so, like, I even tried Smart Recovery, for fuck's sake. I tried going over there because I was like, you know what, dude, maybe life was better without me being all fucked up all the time. But
tell me what, you know, recovery is. Tell me about that. I'm not familiar with that. Are you, Chris?
Oh, yeah.
You are?
Yeah, yeah. I had to learn about it in addiction counseling classes. That, and there's like Bright Ring as well, which is another another one. Apparently, they all work at about the same rate.
Well, there's more or less.
Yeah. But Smart Recovery is sort of a, God, I honestly can't remember much about it. And this is super telling. They had the worst website I've ever seen. I couldn't actually, like, it made them look so dumb. Like, you're Smart Recovery, bro. Come on. And I could not figure out what the program was about because I couldn't use their website. It was the worst thing I'd ever seen. Just the most convoluted, broken piece of shit. But, you know, it was written at a slightly higher level than AA. It wasn't like, you know, eighth grade level English, but it was also just basically incomprehensible. And as far as, you know, your beef with this particular group, I think that that's completely legitimate. Sometimes you just don't gel with people. And sometimes...
Yeah.
Really sounds like a bad group. I mean, especially if I had walked in, especially early on, and there was somebody with 15 years crying about how hard it was, I'd have turned around and walked out too. That the people...
That legit is what did it.
You know, I've told to some people, when you're new, you know, you're 6 months, 8 months, I expect you to be fucked up and crying or not knowing your ass from the hole in the ground or whatever. But if you're 5 years and you're still talking like, we're going to have a chat. That's not what I signed up for. Just to give you a little background, though, Chris and I are, Chris has a lot of time, too. He's in the double digits now, too. Where are you at now, Chris? Like 12 or 14 or?
I'll have 13 years in October, I think. Yeah.
So me with 25, but like your sponsor said, we're both too smart for our own good. And he's too young. I'm too handsome. So this should really be sober, but here we are nonetheless. and we're aware of that, you know, so that's part of the fun we have with the podcast. I don't know if you're on the squirrel cage or not. Like I said,
I don't know the answer, honey. I'm sorry.
But you know what inspired us? I don't know if you heard about this. Chris turned me on to this podcast called Dopey. Have you ever heard of it or listened to it?
No.
It's basically, it's junkie stories. It's junkie stories and they're pretty entertaining. You know, in general.
It's like going to a meeting and hearing that dude talk about how he stole all that money to go get a bag of dope or something like that.
But more like I woke up with my dick in a rabbit or you know, whatever.
Oh no, I really gotta check that out. That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, some of it's pretty good. But it is like, you know, but it is all recovery talk. And if you don't wanna listen to that, then you know, I go to meetings very rarely, especially during COVID. And the ones that I mostly go to are like, you know, how do I say this? I saw this thing the other day and it was, I don't drink because I'm no fun, but that's also a choice that I've made is to be no fun. So the stuff that I do is like, you know, I go to Buddhist meetings and meditation meetings and all that other stuff because I'm old. And it turned out after I quit drinking for a while that I didn't actually like most of the things that people thought were fun. Like, it turns out I hate live music. And
I've always hated live music. Unless it was like in a symphony kind of setting. I was a big classical music guy and like jazz and stuff. And most people look at me like, oh, you like death metal, bro? I'm like, no, I don't like that shit. You know, but I'm real big into like jazz and classical. That, but I like rock music too, but you won't ever catch me at a rock concert.
And,
it's too loud, too many people.
Chris, you don't like people either, do you?
No. Mm-hmm. Generally, in general, no.
No.
So, which makes it a little harder, especially since part of the appeal for the program for most people is the fact that you do get this community, right? It doesn't sound like you gelled with that community. I got really lucky. I met cool people right off the – a lie. They weren't cool. They weren't cool at all. They were just really desperate nerds in like in need of another desperate nerd to get along with, and I happened to be that desperate nerd, and we hung, you know, there where I'm at is just loaded with 24-hour coffee shops, and that was we did because we couldn't drink, as we hung out at 24-hour coffee shops, and and that provided that sort of social thing that we needed. Yeah.
The other thing about that group, because I was part of that one as well, was that a lot of the members were diagnosably mentally ill. And that made for an interesting group, really.
It did.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hate everybody. I think I just hated the program in general. It didn't work for me. And I'm going to openly say that, but the people honestly didn't help. I could count it on one hand, probably about two or three okay people there. One of them, she's great. She actually gets out. She does a lot of service work. And, hell, I've helped her out a few times. You know, she's like, can I get a ride or something? I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll help you out. And she's a friend of mine. I know her husband. They have a beautiful family, and they're great. I got another buddy of mine, Javi, who, quote-unquote, relapsed. but he's doing great. And he just said that the program wasn't working for him. And
well, there you have it. I did some editing, but for the most part, that's the complete part of what was recorded. To his credit, Bob said at least twice that it wasn't so much the people as it was that the program didn't work for him. And that's hard to argue with. He also talks about a friend of his that, as he puts it, quote unquote, went out and hasn't been back to AA, and he's okay. And that resonates for me because I know of at least two people. One in particular is a dear friend of mine, and she was sober for 5 years in the program. And what she found out was that she needed psych meds. And once that was addressed, she figured out she wasn't an alcoholic, and since has started drinking again, has the occasional margarita, and it's been at least another 5 years, maybe 10, since she's gone out. And to my vision, she has never turned into the out-of-control alcoholic that I've seen other people turn into who have decided that they weren't alcoholic, either because they were too young or too smart or too handsome. And they decided that they weren't alcoholic, and then they stopped drinking, and then their entire life blows up and goes to hell. And then they come back in with their tail between their legs. The 12-step programs make no claim being the only way to get sober. It's just that it worked for me. From time to time, people say, well, the recovery rate in Alcoholics Anonymous is, for example, only 5%, which isn't true, but let's say for the sake of argument for now that it is. Well, for me in the past 28 years now, it's been 100% successful. If it didn't work for someone else or whatever, the percentages are irrelevant to me. Oh, I almost forgot. As it came closer to the final recording, I called Bob 2 days beforehand to remind him. Then I called him the same day of the recording. Then I called him an hour before the recording, and we've never heard from him again. So there you are. I've been hanging on to this for almost 3 years because it seemed like something interesting and entertaining when I listened to it again, and I hope you did too. You have safely exited the squirrel cage, presenting thought-provoking conversation about recovery issues, which, if we've done our jobs, will anger someone somewhere. If you have a question, comment, or suggestion for topics or guests, please just keep them to yourself. Oh, just kidding. You can post them on Facebook at SquirrelCageAA, where you can find more details about today's podcast. Be sure to like our page so you will be notified when our next podcast drops, which is something we do at completely unpredictable intervals. Our delightful music is provided for free by Kevin MacLeod on incompetech.com, with further details about that on our Facebook page. Remember, the great obsession for every sober alcoholic is desire to control and enjoy their thinking. So give that up like we did, and we'll have new stuff for you soon. Bye-bye.